God, it's so inspiring for me every time to take a look at what you're doing in people's lives, one life at a time, through a crazy church like this and churches that are all over the city of Cincinnati that are having a positive impact on people's lives and churches all across the state and nation and world. And I pray that you would help us to understand why it is that the church is so critical to our personal lives and our ability to deal with this thing called life. And help my words today to be clear and help our hearts to be open. And it's in the name of your Son that I pray. Amen. I was thinking yesterday, you know what the craziest thing about this series is? The craziest thing in talking about a church is that I'm talking about it. That's the craziest thing. And that I actually care about the church. I mean, a lot of you might just assume that I kind of fell off the turnip truck with a love for the church. And that's not the case. I went through three distinct negative phases towards anything related to church in my life. The first phase kind of was around when I was 14, 15. It was actually 0 to 14, 15. This was the boredom phase. I remember sitting in church, my dad singing the choir, my mom playing the organ, and just sitting there bored out of my gourd. And saying to myself, I cannot wait till I get old enough to get out of my parents' house because the last thing I'm going to do is come back to church again. And I looked at people who were sitting around. I looked at the looks in their faces. And it's like I almost said, what are you doing here? You don't want to be here. I can read it all over your body language. And I just thought, man, why do people do this? It was boredom. And then my next phase was church is a joke phase. I found myself coming to understand who God was and having a relationship with Christ. And so I figured, well, I guess I ought to still do the church thing. So I ended up still going to church, and then I found myself in another church in college, and this was kind of the joke phase. We had sort of like connect cards like we have, where you could write in your prayer request, and then those would be submitted to people who would actually pray for those. And I used to have really great fun making up names of people who had fake problems to put on the cards, you know, to put in there. You know, like one of them, and I actually heard the story of the woman, her name is Virginia, a dear elderly woman who was doing the reception at the church. She would sit in the prayer circle and read the card like that I had put, and it would be like, oh Lord, I'm praying for Amanda Huggenkiss is what I'm praying for. Pray, help Amanda Hug, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I had names that I really cannot tell you from church, but they were awesome names. If you really want to know what kind of names, you can see me afterwards, but, you know, you might say, oh, that's awful. Why would you do that? Well, because church was a joke to me. What is this about? And then I went into the disappointment phase. I found myself on staff at a church, and I found myself also at the same time going to seminary. And there was a budget meeting, and there was a budget crunch, and I wasn't by this meeting. I wasn't on this elder board that would make these decisions. But I come into work the next day, and I'm informed, oh, Brian, we've decreased your salary by 50%. We want you to do, you're supposed to do exactly what you've always been doing, but hey, you know, money's tight, so you have to have 50% less. I didn't know this was coming or anything, and bam, massive disappointment. Now, if you would have told me in the midst of all of those phases that I'd be sitting up here on stage and talking about how the church is the hope of the world, how it can change the world, and how it is something you can give your life to and has an impact, I would have said, no, 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 no way. It is crazy, utterly crazy. One of the scripture passages that kind of started changing my mind about the role of the local church comes from the book of Matthew, and it's when Jesus was interacting with a lot of his friends. Let's take a look at this. Look what it says. Well, when Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, who do people say the Son of Man is? That's him. It's one of his titles. Who do people say the Son of Man is? And they replied, well, some say John the Baptist. Others say Elijah. And still others, Jeremiah or one of the prophets. But what about you, he asked. Who do you say I am? And Simon Peter answered, well, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. Jesus is growing in popularity, and he's just curious what people really think about him. So he said, hey, who are people saying that I am? What's the word in the street? And people go, well, you know, a lot of people think that you're a spiritual reincarnation of the ancient heroes of old reincarnated. A Jeremiah or something like that. They think you're a reincarnation of spiritual greats of before. And someone else says, well, another people think that you're just one of many great spiritual examples. And then there's John the Baptist who is awesome, and there's you. And so people are always saying you're a great spiritual model and an inspiration. And they say, what about you? Let's forget about other people. What about you? Who do you say I am? And Simon says, that's his name. Simon says, probably we got the game. Kind of got the name, you know. Simon says, hey, I say you're the Christ. I say you're the Son of the living God, which in Jewish thought, and all of them were Jews. To say that you're the Son of the living God is to say You are God. That's who I say. And everyone's kind of like, oh! Everyone's kind of like, oh no, that's a risky thing to say right there. There's sort of this pregnant pause. And here's what Jesus says. Blessed are you, Simon, for this was not revealed to you by man, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you're Peter, and on this rock I'll build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. He says, man, you were on it. You were on it. Blessed are you. Yes. Yes, you have it. The fact that you know this is not just because you've been a good seeker. It's not just because you've undergone a good seeking process. But God is doing something in your heart to help you understand this and get this. And here's the thing. I'm now going to change your name. You're not going to be known as Simon anymore. I'm going to call you Peter because Peter is rock. It's a foundation. Because this crazy speak, this idea that I am God, this is going to be the cornerstone foundational testimony for an unbelievable move of God. And people are going to come together with this belief, and they're actually going to do something, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. You think of gates. Some people go to church to escape their problems. They go, hey, if I want to come, to get away from the big bad world, I want to come to church and escape my problems. And that's not the model for church that Jesus lays out. The gates of Hades are kind of like this fence right here. It's a stationary object. That thing's not moving. We're not supposed to run away from the gates of Hades. What he's saying is, all that is hellish in this world, all that is evil in this world, should be overcome by a group of people who are committed to changing the world, and the gates of hell won't prevail against it. It will be a forward, ongoing movement. You don't escape your problems, but you attack the problems together as a community. This was the vision, this was the marching orders that Jesus gave for every local church to be. This is the reason why the local church should be, and has been at certain times, the most powerful force in the history of the world. It is the hope of the world. I've been thinking about this, and for a long time I've been thinking about that. Like, well, how is that? How can the church be the hope of the world? How can it be crazy enough to think that it can change the world? And as I've been thinking about that, it intersected with a lot of our experiences that we had in South Africa. Libby and I went to South Africa several weeks ago to explore a potential partnership with a church over there and dealing with some of the problems and the hellish things that are taking place in South Africa. And I want to spend the rest of our time talking about some of the learnings that I had in South Africa and the way they relate to learnings here in America, and all together how the only rational conclusion is the local church is the crazy hope of the world. And I want to show you a video to get us started on this so you have some framework before you watch this. It's a 9-minute video, so just relax, sit back, don't be looking at your watch, it's 9 minutes. It's also descriptive of where we spent our time. What you're going to see is not an accurate reflection of all of South Africa, but it's an accurate reflection of where we spent our time interacting with people and with the people of Charity and Faith Church, who Titus Atole is a pastor, who's actually spoken here at Crossroads a couple times. And the other thing is, you're going to look at this, and there's going to be some baggage that you're going to have in watching some of this. All of us do, because we've all kind of watched stuff on television that's been somewhat manipulative. And I'm not going to get up afterwards and say, and you know, for only 29 cents a day, you know, but you can do, I'm not going to do it. It's going to feel that way because it's going to tap into some of the baggage. But I think what I experienced there was a pretty significant thing in many, many ways. And I'd like to let you in on some of that. So let's take a look at this. Oh, by the way, I'm sorry, come back up here. One more time before you say it. Anytime I took the video camera and I actually would use it, I want you to know that it was not exploitive at all. I would ask people's permission to use a video camera. And on top of that, people love the video camera because they've never been on video camera before. It's kind of like giving a kid candy. And so it was actually a really, really cool thing. So just kind of have that in your mind as you watch this. Okay, let's take a look at this.
In South Africa and the rest of Africa, we consider the blessing of salvation, of being a child of God, of new birth, as the most greatest blessing. When a person gives his life to the Lord, he is blessed. Just to have Christ in your life, there is no greater blessing that God will ever give to all of us than the blessing of knowing Christ. And so that's, I think that's the difference between Africa.
Because you don't see that here in America.
Well, I wouldn't say I don't see that, but what I see here and what I hear with the people that, you know, I've interacted with is that when you are blessed is when you have a nice car, when everything is going well, when you have money, when you live in a nice home. That's part of it. But that's not the most greatest blessing. Whereas in Africa, you have poor people, sick people, but men, they are so happy. They have peace. They have joy, even if they lack nothing.
You know, you can look at some of those images and you can get depressed, but if you get depressed by looking at that, you're really missing what's behind that whole thing. The level of joy and hope and contentment in people's faces was just stunning in the midst of awful circumstances. And the reason is because a lot of those people that we were interacting with are feeling the power of a local church that's changing their world. I believe that the church is the crazy hope of the world. And as I've thought about it, and based on my experiences in South Africa and what I personally experienced, I think there's four reasons why the church is uniquely positioned to be the hope of the world. First is this. The church has a playbook. The church has a playbook. There is an unalterable constitution that says, this is the way the church and your life is supposed to function. That playbook is called the Bible. And it works. Doesn't matter what religion you might be affiliated with, everybody adores Mother Teresa in her memory. What she did in Calcutta is utterly astounding. But you know, a lot of people don't understand is when she first went to Calcutta to help the hurting there, the authorities, the religious authorities and the governmental authorities were not so sure that they were into this Catholic nun and her friends having an impact. Because in their religious system, if you were hurting, it was because you were having to pay for the wrongs in your previous life, and now you were reincarnated, and to actually help you was to counteract the mission of God. And that's the way it was in the midst, and is in the midst of that Hindu society. And when she came in and modeled for people what it looks like when you actually come in and change the world, it started changing that city, or at least the lives that had seen it and been a part of it. And why was she like that? It's because she had a playbook that says, this is how you change the world. I know with all the problems I have as a husband, and I have many of them, I'll tell you, the playbook called the Bible helps me be a better husband than I would be otherwise. Because it tells me I need to die for my wife. It tells me I need to serve my wife. You can look at other playbooks and other religious literature that does not at all give that as a template for what a husband is to do. Very clearly says, husbands are up here, wives are down here, do what you need to do and whatever you want to. But the playbook tells me differently. It's one of the reasons why the church is the hope of the world. I had a lot of interesting comments a couple weeks ago when I talked about our layover in Paris, 32-hour layover and our quick tour of Paris and a lot of the churches that were there. And I talked about a lot of the churches were museums, you know, just kind of dead, nothing happening. A lot of you didn't like that comment. And, you know, I think it's totally cool. We can disagree and have an open line of communication. I think it's totally great. But I get to have the last word on it. You know, I do because I'm on stage, so I get the last word. And, you know, there's a reason why 2% of Europeans go to church, as opposed to here in America, where it's 30 to 40% and going south regularly. But there's a reason only 20%, because there's no life, there's no vitality. And because a long time ago, for a number of different factors, they strayed from the playbook and there was no power to actually offer. Why? Why do Christ followers historically do crazy, crazy things? It's because they have a playbook that directs them to do so. We have three services here on a Sunday morning. Titus's Church, Charity and Faith Church, has three services, but it's in three different locations. The second location was the one with the tent. So I would preach at the one, and I would get in the car and have a 10-minute drive or so to the next one. And the tent was the poorest of the poor churches. It was entirely, just about entirely single women and their children. They have some remnants of the previous African culture. They're left over, and they're not serving them very well. It used to be that women would stay back in the villages, and the men would go out to fight. The men would go out and be warriors. Well, the tribal system really doesn't exist anymore. There really isn't any fights to fight, but the men haven't really figured out, I got to transition the fighting thing to the working thing. It's, you know, it's kind of sad. So it's very common for the women to be doing it all. And so in the midst of this service, all women, pretty much, and their kids, and Titus told me the story about these women. They have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go to, be a domestic housekeeper in a white person's house someplace. Now, when you talk about the haves and the have-nots, it pretty much cuts across racial lines. There's, whites, Indians, coloreds, blacks. And even though the distinctions are wiped out, in many ways, it's a way less racial society than America is. It's really amazing. That's a whole nother message altogether. But the economics haves and the have-nots are pretty much still divided up amongst those race lines. And so these women will get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to catch a series of public transportation, get into the place where they can then go and serve in a house, someone's house, to cook, clean for $5 a day. And they catch public transportation all the way back, and it gets back about 9 o'clock at night. And they go to sleep, and they relive the whole day again over and over again. They pull their kids together, and one of them stays back and kind of just does a daycare thing. And you look in these women's faces, and you saw joy and contentment, yet at the same time, you saw there was a level of pain. And in many ways, they're no different than us, or many of us, rather. You know, some of us maybe have a six-figure salary, or you got a seven-figure net income, or net worth maybe even, and yet, the look on our faces, whatever our economic circumstances, no difference than the look on their faces, and it's because of what Dallas Willard said. Dallas Willard said this. That the human hearts are radically unsuited for the pain and disappointment that will come their way. Doesn't matter how much money you make or what your position is. There will be human pain, disappointment that comes, and we need each other. That's why I said to these women, I said, life is too hard to do it alone. That's one of the functions of a local church, is you come together and we do it together. The church has a playbook. The church also has a mobilization system. The local church has a mobilization system. You know, when we gather together, whether it be on a weekend service or Next Level or an A-team or whatever it is, there is the opportunity for us to encourage each other and mobilize each other. Remember a few years ago, the National Volunteering Day, Colin Powell's a spokesman. I don't even know if that thing, is that thing still going on? I haven't heard much about it. He was like on the cover of Parade magazine in USA Today, trying to mobilize Americans to actually volunteer and make a difference. Fantastic initiative. You don't hear that much about it anymore for a reason, because there isn't an ongoing mobilization system to keep people fired up. The other day I was, a couple nights ago, sitting around a deck, had a little fire pit on the deck and had some friends over, and we were kind of hanging out and kind of talking, and fire was roaring. It was a really great fire. I realized that it didn't matter how great that fire was roaring and how much the piece of wood were firing up in there. If you take one of those pieces of wood and set it aside, in the matter of seconds, it will stop being on fire. It will. Logs need to be around other burning logs to stay hot and stay fired up. And that's what all of us need. It doesn't matter what your intentions are. It doesn't matter what you want to do. If you try to live life as an isolationist, you will not be red hot. You will not be on fire. We need each other. We need to come together regularly, encourage one another, and fire one another up. One of those images in there, you saw a woman coming in and like taking her Bible in the midst of service and like fanning on the Bible. I think we've got a little snapshot of it. I don't know where people would run in with their Bibles and start fanning you. I'm going, what is this? And I realized this was how they would fan you with encouragement. They would take their Bible that represented blessings, like, I want to fan you with, I want to encourage you, I want to fire you up. So I'd be speaking. If I said something somebody liked, someone would run up with their Bible and go, they start fanning me, you know, fanning me with the Bible. What are they doing? They're trying to fan into flame what they were hearing. They were so encouraged by it, and they wanted to completely fire me up that much more. And that's what a church does. It's the only institution that has a regular mobilization and encouragement system to make a difference. So the reason why the church is the hope of the world. This is my favorite weekend service of the entire year, by far. I like it more than Christmas. I like it more than Easter. I like it more than any. It's because when I come in and I see people with their boxes and those volunteers out there kind of doing the Thanksgiving thing, I get fired up. I completely get fired up. And I don't even know who thought of the thing anymore. I don't know if it was Steve Andrew a while ago or Phil and Eileen Tan. I don't know. All I know is since that thing started, I've been, and my family, and many of us have been helping people who wouldn't have a Thanksgiving meal otherwise have a Thanksgiving meal. Now here's the embarrassing thing. You know how many times I helped the poor in Thanksgiving before that effort came along? You know how many times I actually provided a Thanksgiving meal for somebody? Zero. Nada. Freebie. Never happened. That was from Monster Garage. You ever see Monster Garage? It just never happened. I wouldn't give to the poor on Thanksgiving. There wasn't a mobilization system. There wasn't something that was fanning me to do something different. And so someone casts a vision for me and I see other people doing it. I just get fired up and say, man, I am on them. My box will be bigger than yours. It's kind of like, you know, what I want to do. I want to go out and do that thing. There's a change mechanism. There's a mobilization mechanism. Church is a change mechanism as well. Church brings people into alignment to actually make a difference. Titus's church over there is known as the rich church. It's known as the rich church. Now, it doesn't make sense because over half the people don't have a job. And those that do have a job, you know, don't have a lot of things that you and I take for granted, but they're known as a rich church by the people in the community because they see that people go to the church and they get tangible help and they end up getting a job and getting money to support themselves and their family. And so people in the community say, well, that's the church you go to get rich in. They have a computer school where they train people how to use computers and then they can go out and get a marketable skill. And that's what you saw the graduation day in the midst of their church service. I'm sitting there like in the front row and all of a sudden this African music starts blaring out. I can't remember how it's going. And all of a sudden from the back of the church, all these people with graduation gowns start like coming forward. They're taking their good old time. It was like a 10-minute march or so and coming up. And I'm going, what is this all about? And they had just graduated from the computer school. And so now they were going to be able to get a job. And it was a massive, massive celebration. People bringing their Bibles up and fanning on them the whole time, you know, and they're coming up and it's, their lives are changed as a result of that local church. Well, sometimes when I want to have a real sobering, you know, mental process, I think, all right, if I take a snapshot of my life right now, what does my life look like right now? What do my friendships look like right now? What's my, you know, my family look right now? What's my heart look like? Just whatever. But the totality of my life, if I were to take a snapshot of the totality of my life right now and then say, all right, if there had not been a local church that fanned things into flame inside of me and people who did stuff for me that I couldn't have done for myself and raised the bar in my life and part of a team, all that kind of stuff, what would the snapshot of my life look like without the power of a local community? What would that snapshot look like? Friends, that's an ugly looking picture, let me tell you. An ugly looking picture. I might look the same, but internally my life has been changed as a result of people building into me in the local church. It is a change mechanism. And the local church, what's offering its best, has always been that way. No question, churches, or specifically, people in the name of Christ have done whacked, crazy things. You can take a look at the Crusades, take a look at Hitler invoking the name of God and the atrocities that he did. But those were all individuals who weren't following the playbook. Those were all individuals that strayed from the playbook. If you take a look at what the church has really done, it has changed the world. A couple books really impacted my thinking on this. Christianity on Trial and Under the Influence. Just talks about how the power of the local church has changed society. Into every society a local church has gone, there has been an increase in literacy because the people wanted to help people read the playbook. There's been an increase in literacy. Into every society the local church has gone, there's been an increase in women's rights. Maybe not as much as it should be, but an increase. It's gone up. In every society that we've gone into, there's been an increase for the caring. There's been an increase in caring for the poor. The public school system was an invention of local churches that said, man, we want to develop the minds. Hospitals, invention of Christians who are fanning each other together in the midst of a local church. As the church has been against protecting those who can't protect themselves. Mental hospitals, orphanages, all traced back to individuals coming together and fanning each other into flame and saying, let's change this world. Let's not come in here just to escape the world. People come to church and think I need to get away from reality, away from the world. That's not what Jesus says. Jesus says, no, you come in here to get fired up and then you all go out together and change the world. You don't come here to escape the world and get in your little holy huddle, you know, and then lob hand grenades at all the people who have different views than you. No, you come and you do life together and then you get ready to go out and be a forward moving force that makes things happen. And we can do that because we can sit around a locker room environment and fan each other in the flame, which is how it was destined to be. You go over to Africa, you realize the church is literally the only hope for there. I mean, when you're poor, there's no governmental program that's going to feed you. They'll have rough governmental clinics, but they're so small and that you can't really get a lot of care there. If you go in to see whether or not you're going to have HIV, whether or not you have HIV, they do give you a little, you know, prick, test you. And if you're pregnant, they'll give you something that might decrease the likelihood of your child contracting the HIV virus. But if you're not, they look at you and basically in their language go, hey, you know, you got HIV, man, sucks to be you. Why don't you go home now? And that's it. That's it. And you go home and you whittle away to nothing. Titus's cousin, when I was there, just got contracted HIV. 8 days later, bam, you know, in the ground. And it's the local church. It's people that are doing this kind of stuff. It used to be that you, it's just now changed that when you would have HIV, they would stick you into a room. You were an embarrassment to the family. They'd shut the door, and then they would just put food in there and shut the door behind you. They didn't know how to cope with it. And as a church, it's on the front lines of actually making a difference and ministering to people. And this is the way it's been in the midst of church history. Leprosy in the first century AD and city of Rome, people just say, man, these people with lepers, just put them away because they thought they were going to contract the disease. And it was followers of Christ who said, man, I already died to self. It's not about me. I've already died to self. And so we are going to go in and bless and minister to the people with leprosy, because if we die, we die. So what? I've already died to myself. And that was how, one of the reasons why the early church, in the midst of a hostile environment, spread, because they were the hope of the world. People get all upset and they see some of the problems in our world and we blame it on God. Let me tell you something. There's no God-forsaken places in this world. There's no God-forsaken people in this world. There's church-forsaken places. There's church-forsaken people. The church was always designed to be the delivery mechanism of the love of God. And when we come in and we play church, guess what? The world doesn't work the way it should. The church is the delivery mechanism. The church is the change mechanism. The church is the mobilization mechanism to deal with the issues and the problems of this world. And there's been crazy churches since the beginning of time that have had a significant impact on our world. And that's, I think, the fourth reason I thought about my experiences in South Africa, and I think about here that that the power of God resides in the church. The local church, there's a unique and special power of God, and that is where it resists. Now let me, or where it exists, let me end a never-ending debate. Size doesn't matter, okay? Size doesn't. No, I'm talking about church size. I don't know what you're thinking about, but size doesn't matter, okay? There are churches that are big, massive churches. There are churches that are itty, bitty, 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 bitty churches. Size doesn't matter when it comes to the level of power and influence that a church can have, nor in the validity of a church based on their size. Size doesn't matter. Having said that, when you are effective and there is a power that is residing in the midst of you and people's lives are being changed, it will oftentimes naturally relate to an increase in size. When we were going over to South Africa, we were trying to think through, is there a way that Crossroads might partner with these folks? And that's really why we went over. Titus sounds great on stage, but we wanted to live with the dude. We wanted to go to their church. We wanted to look people in the eyeball and say, is this an organization of integrity before we really figure out how to partner with them in some way, shape, or form? And I just forgot what I was going to say. What was I going to say? Oh, yes, I know this guy. I realized on the way over that this church is, it's the monster church in the area. It's the largest church in the area. And so I started thinking to myself, gosh, we're going to go over there, but maybe we'll find some other churches and really, you know, have more of a chemistry with them. Maybe there's like a church that's just really struggling and hurting, a smaller church that's really hurting that maybe we can really partner up with. And I thought about it. Titus is a church, so they'll do about 1,500, 2,000 people a week or something like that. And then I realized, hold on a minute, wait. Vanguard does our retirement fund kind of thing. I don't go to the fund managers at Vanguard and say, you know what? Would you please find for me a really hurting, struggling, small business? I would just like my retirement, you know, say, go, just find a business that's hurting. That's what I want you to invest in. No, I only give my mind one. Find me one that's making a difference. Find me one where there is what the Bible would call fruit. Where there's fruit, where there is something happening. And this is the way that our giving needs to operate. We shouldn't look for the hurting thing. We should look for the thing that is the growing thing, the thing that is the making the difference thing. And this place was making a difference. And one of the things we thought about when we went over, and we kind of had it cemented, that while we are going to do our building campaign around here in several months, to deal with the unbelievable increase in people who are having their lives changed here, we're going to lop onto that the ability to build for them an AIDS hospice center where people can go who don't have family to care for them. They can be cared right there in the midst of the church. And then when you die, your body lies in your house, dead carcass. And I'm being descriptive, but that's the way it is. Just lies there until they can figure out what to do with you for a funeral. And part of the cultural thing is funerals are supposed to be this big blowout affairs, and so you have people who don't even have money, yet they take out loans, like a 30-year mortgage, to pay for the funeral of a loved one, and they go deeper and deeper into debt, and the cycle is just unbelievable. So we want to be able to have a mortuary. Titus wants to be able to have a mortuary right there. They can house these bodies to help these people actually not have this thing completely crush them. And so we're going to build into our next campaign the ability to build that kind of structure. And some people would say, man, that's crazy. Well, we got all kind of needs around here. Why that's crazy? Yeah, that's exactly right. Yes, that's crazy. Yes. Yes, that's the point. That's exactly the point. That is definitely crazy. And we are called to be a change agent in the world, not just this city, but all over the place. Isn't that exciting? You know, and if that's not exciting to you, fires me up. And this whole idea of investing where there's something happening is the exact thing Jesus talked about in the book of Luke, chapter 19. He talked about a parable called the parable of talents. And God looks at this person who's not doing what he should be doing with what he has. He's actually very small in terms of his resources because he's not doing what he needs to do. And God says, well, I'm going to take away from you and I'm going to give it to the dude over there who has a lot of resources because he is having a return on investment. And Jesus says, that is where your giving needs to go, is where something is happening, where change is happening. Now, I would be completely irresponsible if I didn't say this. And I'm going to say this before I say this. Please understand, I don't work on commission. And there's a team of volunteers that set my salary. I have nothing to do with it. And you're going to all have all kind of baggage when I say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I haven't made a specific ask here at Crossroads for over 3 years. We've talked about tithing as a biblical thing and giving and all that. We've talked about that, but that hasn't been a specific ask. And I just felt it would be irresponsible to not counteract some of the faulty thinking that some of us have, because we look around here and we go, man, this place is big, they got nice videos, they don't need anything, I'm gonna find the hurting place to give myself to. Maybe you should find the hurting place, maybe that's where it needs to best go. But I would just ask you to reconsider how I give has to be reflective to how I invest. It has to go where there is change, where there is a difference. And right now our attendance around here is like this. It is charting north, it is being, and our giving is going like this. Okay, now that's not good. That's not good. It's kind of going like this. And I would just ask all of us, if you really believe the hope of the church is the hope of the world and that this local church is making a difference, I would ask you, be real serious about the spending you're going to have this holiday. I'd ask, we need to finish this year strong. Sometimes we need to re-alter our giving habits, period, so we can have an impact on our lives and our friends' lives. The church is the hope of the world, and it must be funded for it to be the hope of the world. I was, one of the things that I'm still processing, there's so many things I'm processing through from South Africa. And, I took a few weeks to talk about this just because you've been asking me, well, tell me. Liv and I are still processing through all this stuff. I'm just giving you just the knife edge of this whole thing. And one of the things that, I'm still trying to figure out is, and you saw it in the video, people who have nothing, the level of joy and contentment they have in their faces far exceeds what the average American has. And it makes no sense, because as Americans, we think that I get joy, I get contentment by getting more stuff and getting more money. And I need to get more stuff and get more money, have more things in order to be joyful and contented. Yet, when you look over there, when they have that, not at all, you can see all you saw in the video was like white teeth. That's all you could see. And people smiling. The level of joy and contentment. And it struck me. It's like money here is a spiritual force. It's a negative spiritual force that completely deludes. And it's sickening to think that, you know, I need more to have my life be better. And it doesn't do it. The only thing that does it is an inner relationship with Christ. And yet we're deluded. And we need to think through, man, I need to have all of my life be geared towards making a difference. I believe the core of my being the church of the hope of the world. I'm not here by default. I could do a lot of other things in my life, and all of us here could do a lot of other things with our Sunday mornings at 10:20. I believe the core of my being, and many of you do too, that the church is the hope of the world. It is the delivery mechanism for change and for comfort in the midst of this world. And I believe all local churches can be that. And I believe there's local churches across Cincinnati that are doing that and are being that. And I believe, to the core of my being, Crossroads Community Church, at the corner of Madison and Ridge, that congregates and fires each other up in this auditorium numerous times, I believe the core of my being, We are going to change the world. Call me nuts, call me crazy. I've seen too much change happen in many of our lives, and I see too much happening in the horizon. I believe it is the hope of the world. It is what Jesus gave his life for. God does not want us to escape the world. He wants us to change the world. Why don't we stand right now? I'd like to invite you to stand. And I'd like to pray for you. Let me pray. God, in this room, we've got a lot of things that need change. We've got a lot of hurts in this room. Whether it's loneliness, whether it's depression, whether it's lack of resources, whether it's lack of a job, lack of companionship, I mean, or the presence of things that we don't want, like physical infirmity or some such thing. There's so many things happen in this world, and I pray that this church has an impact on all of us in increasing ways. And I pray that you enable us as a church to have an increasing impact on others. It's in the name of your Son that we pray. Amen.